Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Anupama. And hello, everyone. I'd like to start simply by saying that that's not really an appropriate title. And I didn't really realize it until this morning when I was looking over my notes. I'm hoping that by talking with you for the next 20 minutes, you'll understand that the real talk that I want to give is one about the power of the public and private sectors working together in partnership to enable the procurement changes that need to take place in our schools. So this is really about a public-private partnership model, and let's see what you think by the time I finish this. Okay, so here's my disclaimer statement. I had no personal financial relationships with anything relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months. It's the first time I've had to say that kind of thing. So really I want to just set some context for about the first 5 minutes and bring us, since I'm going to be talking about lunch and breakfast, to really bring us back to where this all started in 1946 with the enabling legislation, the National School Lunch Act, and really draw your attention to the fact that its purposes were twofold. One, about the health and well-being of our nation's children, and the other, really, about our food system and the consumption of nutritious agricultural commodities and other foods. It's important to remember that as we walk through because of that very intimate connection between the food that we eat and our health. And so this is a photo from the National School Food Service Management Institute archives of school gardens back in the 30s. Actually, school lunch came into being by legislation in 46, but we've been feeding kids a lot earlier than that. So now we're up in this photo, same archive, to about the early 50s, and you see these school lunch ladies handling whole chicken there, which is not something you see in too many schools across the country at this point. Because at this point, our food system has really radically changed from 1946. Our conventional system has been heavily industrialized, and we quite efficiently produce all the foods that we have out there to the tune of something like 15,000 new food products are introduced into our supermarkets annually at this point. And a lot of them look pretty similar to that rack of cereals there, pretty brightly colored to attract. The marketing behind all that has allowed these food products to really become sort of the mainstay of the American diet, and with that, the kinds of questions we have. Because school food really reflects the wider food system, you see some of this, you see sometimes a lot of this inside the schools. No surprise there. It's also a pretty cool moment, I have to say. I haven't always worked on school food. I've worked on it at a couple of different points in my career. And I must say that the First Lady has genuinely opened an amazing national conversation about the health of our children, the likes of which we really haven't seen in such a long time. It's been pretty breathtaking from where I sit. But it's not all so easy. And in a sense, it goes back and forth. This is kind of a zigzag pattern, at least that's how I think of it. I think of it as the challenges on the left-hand side and all those opportunities on the right-hand side. So here we are, 2011, with the highest levels of hunger and obesity. That's part of how our glass is half empty. We've got record enrollment in our federal food programs, thanks to the fact that they're entitlement programs. And they sit within our schools, institutions themselves that are really struggling, as we all know. So it's the food program inside a larger, struggling institutional framework. And then the political challenges that we face when we address any of the concerns around what's wholesome, what's not wholesome. And they're pretty thick, those challenges. On the right-hand side, the first point is one that I want to speak a little bit more about, in that I'm pretty much a glass half full type, and in saying that, I can say that there has been tremendous transformation in school food from where I sit. At the same time, it's very uneven. I would say the transformation we've seen is like the beginnings of a wider transformation that's happening in the food system, so of course it reflects back into the schools. It does not mean that all the wonderful things any of us can talk about happen 100% across the board in schools across the country. There's this back and forth all the time, and it's pretty sobering. If you want to get into the complexities about why this is, the best read out there is really Jan Hoppen's Dick's book, Free for All, Fixing School Lunch in America. If you haven't read it and you find yourself deeply interested in this issue, that is the text to read. So that's sort of the overview, and now I want to go a little bit deeper into school lunch itself and where it sits at this point. At least by the 2010 school year, we had almost 32 million children eating lunch daily, and almost 12 million eating breakfast. This ends up costing $13.3 billion. So that, in and of itself, is a significant part of our economic engine. If you break it down further and look at that cost, what that slide shows us is that more than 90% of it is really going into food and labor. So that's that multiplier effect that Anu Pamo was talking about is right there, because so much of it goes into both the purchasing, the procurement of food, and the labor needed to prep that food up for the kids. And here it is, the school lunch. It looks pretty simple, it looks pretty non-confrontational here, but this is the stuff that made ketchup a vegetable. It's years back. Today it's the stuff of the potato wars that you all hear about. Several weeks back you may have heard about Mrs. Q in Chicago and her million bloggers. And saw some pretty horrendous shots of what photos of what school food looks like. And you know what? It's all true in one way or another. So let's now try to unpack this at least from the lens of where focus is sitting. And just to say that these are the five basic components of school lunch. So you've got that lean protein of a chicken, you've got some whole grain there and the rice, you've got vegetables, you've got fruit, and you've got dairy, the natural thing. And here we are with School Food Focus. We're about 3.5 years. We launched in 2008, so we're treading on about 3.5 years. At this, and we're really a national collaborative network of the large school districts across the country, or that's what our universe is. And the school districts that participate in Focus are school districts that have some level of commitment to changing their purchasing practices to foods that we as a collaborative have all come to define as more healthful, more regionally sourced, and more sustainably produced. We're not talking about percentages of how much has to be in anybody's program. We're all recognizing that as part of the American food system, we can make a lot of changes here on the road to healthful, regional, sustainable. When I talk about, when we say the large school districts, in the language of education circles, these are the districts across the country that have more than 40,000 students. And all told, there are about 140 of those that span the nation. And what we're looking for, what Focus has been seeking out, are districts of that size that are interested in, want to commit to trying to understand how to make these procurement changes at the scale that they're at. And it's that scale that brings them together, because in this world, they can't exactly be buying food directly from farms, exactly. But they can do a lot within their procurement practices to pull this food in. The key part and distinction I want to make between Focus and our sister organization, the National Farm to School Network, is that as you could listen to Anu Pamo's presentation, you could see how broad their work is. It really touches so many people who are connected to school food, from the parents to the chefs to the farmers, etc., to the kids themselves. School Food Focus does not do that. We're different in that sense, in that, and I should maybe I should have been, okay. We're really solely looking at procurement, which in our vision is really this access to more wholesome food that has those characteristics that I just walked through. We try, because of the enormity of the work inside the food system, to stay right on procurement, and yet around us, it's also very clear that while we might be able to, and I think have been helpful, and I'm going to talk about some of the examples soon, of how we've been working with districts to pull in this more wholesome food, the staffs in these kitchens need to learn how to prepare it. They've been eating and serving like everyone across the United States for decades now. So now they've got to go back to cooking, and that's not, you know, that's a whole protocol worth of training, and particularly with food safety issues, you really have to be on the dime about what you're doing with this stuff. The next connection here is with the equipment itself. You're probably, if you have any interest in this arena, know that at one point in time, before the Reagan presidency, equipment support was built into the programming. It's no longer built into the programming. So we've got we need sort of a social investment in the equipment itself. Some schools have managed to keep up, many, many have not. And so if we're going to talk about transitioning a bit from being fully dependent on heat and serve food to working with more minimally processed food, even working with more whole food, not only do people need to be trained, we've got to have the equipment to pull this off. So there's factors in here. Most of the work that FOCUS does is really in trying to help with that access. So here we are, 32 districts across the country that are now engaged in FOCUS in the collaborative over these last several years. To become part of this collaborative, there's a couple of basic things they need to do. One is that their leadership needs to sign on the dotted line that they are committed to trying to learn more about and implement these changes along the lines of healthful, regional, sustainably produced. The next piece is that because we want schools not to have to work in isolation on this, and because the communities are more than interested in trying to help, the other step is for these districts to identify at least one partnering agency that they could envision working with over time in these procurement changes. And this is something that we began in the beginning of our whole story, and it's really worked much to our benefit on a couple of levels. I mean, we get this, there's now 32 districts. The chorus of voices that come through our partners are people from mayoral offices or departments of ag and markets. They are people from health departments. They're anti-hunger folks, university-based folks. The school system basically, the school food folk leadership, identify who those partners are going to be. So that what's happened over time is that two things. One, I think, is that these partnering agencies have gotten firsthand quality level of education about the complicated scenario that school food is all about. I don't think they knew that they were going to learn it to the level they've had to learn it, but they've learned it, and you can see some of the larger organizations who have become partners here in D.C. It's the Farm to School Network. Out in St. Paul, it's IATP, and it really does vary pretty much around the country. Where I want to spend most of my time is taking a look at one of our programs. And you're telling me there's 3 minutes, yeah. I'm saying it's most of my time.
Yeah.
So the Learning Labs. These are 18-month learning journeys, basically. And we've now conducted three of them. One in St. Paul, one in Denver, and there's currently one going on in Chicago, which means that we've gone from smaller 40, 60,000 enrollment districts to one that's in the hundreds of thousands, and that's Chicago. I'm not going to walk you through all of the, what I would say, are very sturdy accomplishments that these districts have made. It's been pretty remarkable. I want to describe a little bit about their process as they're moving forward with this. It's the district, it's their partnering agencies, it's the CS Mott Group for Sustainable Agriculture working on the I was going to say evaluation, I didn't mean that, but on a supply chain work that has to be done along with UC Davis that's been doing the evaluation work. And basically, the process is such that, I think we can go up to this slide, that 3-minute thing made me a little nervous there. What we're trying to do is get the food service folks, and they do, this is an application process, it's many of the districts within Focus have applied for this 18-month run, and basically they're given the technical support and time to figure out which foods they really want to make changes in and why. And in that, our folks work with them in identifying what are the possibilities across that supply chain in terms of making these changes. And so some of the, you can find ones that have to do back on the supply chain there, back to the farms and ranches, where these large districts have been able to make pretty significant changes in the amount of regionally produced food that they're bringing in, the documentation of it, and how they go about doing this through an RFP process that basically is kind of a legalistic thing to do, but it's done in a way that it's very transparent, so all parties know what's happening. And while they're doing this, the prices are fair prices, and at the same time, they're able to synchronize their menu planning with what the local harvests are. So in any of those districts, you see a bump up in all of their produce coming in. So that's one wave of it. Another wave of it is really getting at the processor and manufacturer level, where changes in the formulation of milk, so that there's less added sugar, becomes a very primary thing that districts want done. Or another piece would be to work on bread and getting the whole grain portion up higher than what it's been. So that we're talking something like 60% whole grain as part of that bread component. And this takes a lot of interviewing time, a lot of meeting time to make these connections within the supply chain to these districts. There's one story in all of this supply chain change work that is really significant. So no matter how many signs Linda puts up, I'm going to just walk right through this. This is what's happening with chicken procurement, which is really one of the big mainstays of the protein items in the schools. Started in St. Paul. They were simply trying to get some chicken that was produced within a local 200-mile radius. They actually were able to do that, and that has continued to grow over time. And as they've done that, you can see in this particular slide that what's happened in the whole process, if you look at all of it, is that the amount of processed, chopped, and formed has what? It's decreased over time. The amount of heat and serve processed has also, actually that's going up a little bit. What's growing is that naked protein, that cleaner chicken. And that's really what the schools are trying to get at. They're trying to get at the cleaner chicken. And here's the story that's really the story of the week. I think it's being released at 11 o'clock this morning in Chicago. We took this work that St. Paul had started, and we're able, because of many wonderful collaborators, which includes the Pew Group on, anyone's going to make miss this up a little bit, the Pew Group, it's Human Health and Industrial Farming. Also with Whole Foods has stepped in on this one as a partner. So here's what's happened. Chicago Public Schools began serving local chicken raised without antibiotics today to students in 473 schools. This development comes on the heels of a fresh chicken purchase direct from the USDA earlier this fall. The district's new scratch-cooked chicken program includes about 1.2 million pounds from Amish farms nearby that do not use antibiotics, for a total of about 2 million pounds of fresh chicken in the 2011-2012 school years. Students will be offered bone-in chicken 3 or 4 times each month. This was a long journey to get to this point, And I couldn't actually be happier to share that with you. The partner to the Chicago school system is, I'm going to forget their name right now.
Healthy Schools Campaign.
Is the Healthy Schools Campaign. Right. And so it's been in their 18-month process of their learning lab, they have packaged all of that together to make that happen. Linda's going to turn me right off, and I'm just going to show you one more slide, which is that what's happening now is that the first three learning labs, which were 18-month pieces of work, in which I think we made pretty fundamental change, not perfectly, lots of bumps along the road, in three school districts. It was, we began in St. Paul, it was then Denver, and now Chicago. And the interest within our network is strong enough that our next step is going to be to pull together all of the large districts up in those seven states that you see there into a multi-district learning lab, so that we will be using that purchasing power to speak to the issues that these districts want to make a difference in. It's probably going to be more on chicken, because chicken is such a mainstay in the school lunch program. There's probably more work on produce, but everything is done, since everything is done in a participatory kind of fashion, I'm not sure exactly what the particular foods will be, but that's where we're going, and it's kind of one food at a time, and we'll keep it this level until we need to do something differently. So thank you.